Hello and welcome to Cinepolitics, where we take a look at the social and political implications of today's most interesting documentaries and films. From Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Michael Ayala. I want to thank you very much for joining us. Today we take a look at Inside Job, a film by filmmaker Charles Ferguson. Now, you may remember Ferguson from his 2007 Oscar-nominated documentary, No End in Sight, The American Occupation of Iraq, about the American government's bungling of the war in Iraq. Now, with Inside Job, Ferguson turns to his focus on the devastating global financial crisis of 2008. Narrated by Academy Award-winning actor Matt Damon, Inside Job uses news footage and interviews with financial insiders, journalists, and former government officials to trace the deregulation, speculation, and corruption that led to the worst financial crisis since the Depression. Now, in the end, tens of trillions of dollars were lost, and tens of millions of ordinary people lost their homes and jobs. And perhaps worst of all, no one was held accountable. Here is a look at Inside Job.
In the 1980s, the financial industry exploded. People on Wall Street started getting rich.
I had a friend who was a bond trader at Merrill Lynch in the 1970s. He had a job as a train conductor at night because he had three kids and couldn't support them on what a bond trader made. By 1986, he was making millions of dollars and thought it was because he was smart.
Share prices continued to tumble.
Lehman Brothers was forced to declare itself bankrupt.
The largest single point drop.
When were you first told that Lehman, in fact, was going to go bankrupt?
After the fact.
After the fact. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. What was your reaction when you learned of it?
Holy cow.
You come to us today telling us we're sorry, we won't do it again. Trust us. Well, I have some people in my constituency that actually robbed some of your banks. And they say the same thing.
Well, Inside Job is a complete and comprehensive look at complicated issues, but you don't have to be a financial whiz to understand that the public was duped, and those entrusted with the job of protecting them fell asleep at the wheel. Ferguson is clearly outraged by it all, and if nothing else, Inside Job stands as a rallying cry for the average ordinary citizen to stand up, take notice, and to never let this happen again. Here to discuss the film and the issues surrounding it are Steve Saranovic. He is an associate professor of economics and international affairs at George Washington University. And also joining us is Mohammed Owais. Now, he is a political and economic commentator based right here in Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for joining us here. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
And the film we're discussing today is Inside Job. And I think the first thing that jumps out at me about the film is the anger that Craig Ferguson has. As a matter of fact, he said he had a much tougher first cut that his editor said, you can't go with this. But he's very angry, and his main premise is that this could have been avoided. So I want to get your opinion. Is this something, could this crisis have been avoided, Steve?
I'm not really sure that it could have. And I think part of the problem is really the complexity of the financial system. It's got a lot of small parts to it, and every small part I think is sensible and workable. But the problem with the crisis is really that it got too overblown, and it reached a level that was really more complicated than I think any one person could really understand. So even though we could sort of step back from it and realize that something might be amiss, I don't think that anyone was really wise enough or had enough knowledge to know that this was going to really come crashing down. And I think everyone was as surprised when it did in the fall of 2008 as anyone else.
Mohammed, I'd love to hear your opinion.
Well, I mean, the government should have known that there is something wrong here. We are spending a lot of money and we are borrowing a lot of money. And where is the money going to come from in order to cover the loans we are getting and the bonds we are selling to the Chinese and the rest of the world? I agree with you. I mean, it was an overwhelming big problem, but there are regulators. That's why they got paid and they got voted in order to watch these things. Or otherwise, why do we have a Congress? Why do we have regulators? Why do we have the Fed? Why do we have Bernanke and all these guys? Mm-hmm. Why do we have them? Yes. If they are not sitting there looking at the numbers and, oh, go ahead and borrow more. Honey, I need a new dress, borrow more. I need the new car, borrow more. How are you going to pay for it?
Yes, no question about it. And, you know, one of the interesting things is there's plenty of controls on us as individuals. When we buy the extra car or want to get the extra car or, you know, go too far on our credit. So who dropped the ball? Who do you put the most blame on? Was it the government that was supposed to be watching this? Or is it the corporate folks, individuals themselves? Because there were guys out there who actually predicted that this would happen and no one listened.
Well, there's predictions that it would happen, but, you know, there are predictions all along. You know, there are predictions in 2005, and there are predictions back in 2000, and there were predictions back in 1995. So no one is quite sure, well, when is this prediction going to take place? And different people say it at different times. Some people are optimistic, some are pessimistic. So trying to read through the lines as an individual government regulator, for example, and to know whether this is something that's going to come apart or not, I think is still very difficult. Now, as an individual, I mean, I can remember, you know, as the housing prices in the Washington, D.C. area began to rise, and they seemed to get to levels that were unimaginable.
Unsustainable.
Unsustainable, right? Exactly. You think, well, this is all going to come crashing down. Right. And everyone can kind of look at that and say, well, something seems amiss. But, you know, it still becomes, you hear the stories that say, well, it's a new era. Well, we've got now an international economy. And because of the global capital movements that weren't around 10 years ago or 20 years ago, mm-hmm. it's a whole different situation now. Yeah. And so if you want to believe that things are going to continue,
exactly.
it becomes easier to believe that
yes.
things are going to continue this way. And so I often think that even the people that were in the middle of this, you know, were as surprised as anyone else when
right.
it started to fall apart.
So your
yeah, well, they were surprised, but they were laughing all the way to the bank, too.
Right, right.
So, but, you know, I cannot also, and we cannot sit here and blame the guys at the top.
Right.
It was all
the
of us.
The top where? The top in...
At the top in the government
in
here.
In the government, uh-huh.
In the government, because the regulators are the ones who should have stopped, you know, all these bankers, you know, from taking risk.
Right.
And packaging these loans and mortgages and trying to sell them to the Chinese and hoping things are going to turn around. So we all are responsible. I can say that.
But how
we
are we all are responsible? We're not sophisticated enough. We had no clue. I mean,
yeah, but
as Steve said, we could see that things seemed to be out of control and unsustainable, but we had no basis in knowing
yeah,
that.
But we did not. When the crook came to us trying to sell us a mortgage, which is much bigger than the value of our house, we accepted it. We took it. We took mm-hmm. the money. We mm-hmm. spent it on cars and whatever. And the economy was boiling, bubbling, you know, with the new cars. And I haven't seen so many Mercedeses and BMWs in Washington before.
I agree.
And all of a sudden, you have all these Mercedes, whatever, and go out to the street and now and look for them. They are not there anymore because
that's
they
right.
were repossessed.
That's right.
Because we all were in that euphoria. And then what was happening also, that the trickle-down economics of Ronald Reagan, it was not a trickle down anymore. It was bucket down.
Yes.
And people kept voting for these people. They say, oh, look at the economy. Look at the economy. Look
That's
at
right.
the economy.
Right.
Not knowing that it's going to come back and bite all of us. The only thing I would really disagree with what happened with this economy is bailing out all of these crooks on Wall Street mm-hmm. and all these banks. Let them fail. Because they are the ones who stuck it to us. And now we are having to refinance them.
But that's major
economists and even Warren Buffett said without that bailout, we would have been in much, much worse shape. And I want to take us to my next discussion, which is the true effect of this internationally. We know tens of trillions of dollars were lost. We see the effects here in the States. What effect did this have internationally?
May I say, since you mentioned internationally and you mentioned it once, I think and I feel that since the fall of the Soviet Union, and the socialist system that was on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. and almost the crash of the capitalist system, I think we are due for a new economic system, a new economic model for the world to survive. Or otherwise, I don't think we're going to survive.
So you're saying capitalism is not the future?
Well, I'll let the professor.
I don't think that's
something.
True at all. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, we've been going through business cycles and financial crisis for a long time. Capitalism is an unstable system. It generates an enormous amount of wealth and prosperity, and it has through the century, but it has its ups and downs. And we're currently experiencing a downturn, which I think and hope that we will soon recover from. You know, but at the same time, you know, and back to your point about the bailout, I agree with those that It really was necessary to bail out the financial system, because remember, the entire financial system is based on trust. We're all giving our pensions and our money to the banking system, and we're expecting and hoping that that money is going to be there, at least to some degree, when we go to take it out in our retirement or for our weddings or for whatever events that we wish to have it for. And if we lose that trust, and if the entire system loses that trust, it's going to take an enormous amount of time to try to build that trust up again.
I think that trust is gone now. I mean, we're seeing regular, ordinary folks losing their pensions, and the same folks that who are sitting at the top, and this goes what you mentioned earlier, how did these guys, who you say perhaps didn't know what was going on, how come they're the only ones that benefited from it happening? I mean, that, you know, the proof is in the pudding there.
Well, and that is an unfortunate circumstance because, you know, we did, I think, have to bail out the banks and keep the financial system afloat. And that meant keeping people in positions which, to some degree, had some responsibility for putting us in. You know, this whole too big to fail is really a problem. And the problem comes about because there's really not enough competition. Too big means you've got too large of the market. You don't have enough competition. You don't have enough small players. We can let a lot of small players fail and let them learn their lessons. But when institutions get too big and it threatens the entire financial system for them to fail, we really have a difficult situation.
Yes. Mohammed, I know you wanted to say something.
Well, you know, let me go back to the cyclical part of the economy. I totally agree. Open market is the best market model that we can work with, as long as also we control that open market to play by the rules, not play against the rules, against everybody. And what happened here, it is not cyclical. It was a crooked deal from the beginning. They knew it at the top. They knew it. The economists knew it. They knew that we cannot continue going the way we are going and survive. And all of a sudden, now all of us are in it, not just the big guys or the small guys. The whole country is in it. Yesterday, the economists are talking about there are 50 million Americans without health insurance. You know, it is not money only. It is people with hardships.
Yes,
no, that's right.
So very real.
It is, if it was cyclical, and I have no problem with cyclical, and the distribution of wealth should come from the cyclical movement of the market. And if it was real good cycle, we would have recovered from it already. But it wasn't a normal cycle of the economy. It was a crooked part of the economy that we have to clean up, not to vote for the same people again and again and keep sending them to Washington to fight each other and bring down the country.
All right, Mohammed, I have another piece of film I want to go to. But you raised some great issues, and I'm definitely going to get into a couple of them. But let me go to this next piece of tape here where we have a journalist talking a little bit about something he saw that led him to believe that this whole sort of house of cards was going to come tumbling down. Let's take a look.
A friend of mine who's involved in a company that has a big financial presence said, well, it's about time you learned about subprime mortgages. So he set up a session with his trading desk and me. And the techie who did all this gets very excited, runs to his computer, pulls up in about 3 seconds this Goldman Sachs issue of securities. It was a complete disaster. Borrowers had borrowed on average 99.3% of the price of the house, which means they have no money in the house. If anything goes wrong, they're going to walk away from the mortgage. This is not a loan you'd really make, right? You've got to be crazy. But somehow you took 8,000 of these loans. And by the time the guys were done at Goldman Sachs and the rating agencies, 2/3 of the loans were rated AAA, which meant they were rated as safe as government securities. It's utterly mad.
You know, let me just say this. One thing that becomes clear in the film is that at every level there was corruption. The ratings offices, the regulators, everyone was sort of asleep at the wheel. Now, whether you want to say that was willful or not, that's up for debate. But what's not up for debate is that there were a lot of people out there who were sold the American dream with these mortgages, and now it's the American nightmare. You have folks losing their homes, losing their cars, and you see the distribution of wealth. The difference between the upper 2% and everybody else is growing. Do you believe that that's the case, and that can't be good for our future?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the problems in the way in which we perceive, you know, the wealth that's being generated, especially in the financial industry. You know, at one time, and we can look at the wealth of some individuals like Bill Gates, and it's very easy for all of us to pinpoint exactly what his company did. You know, Microsoft is everywhere. Computers and their operating systems are everywhere. Microsoft Office, everyone uses that. And we can see, okay, he's worth billions of dollars, but we see a product that he's produced that we understand and can recognize why that may have generated as much money and as much wealth for him. When it comes to finance, we have trouble understanding, well, what is it exactly that these financial institutions are doing? And one of the terms I'll often throw out there that bothers me a little bit is that financial institutions are there to manage risk. Now, to me, that's exactly the wrong way to think about it. Financial institutions are there to take savings and to allocate those to productive investments. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to make money by investing in a way that's going to yield a greater return that will then be paid back to savers, and this is a system that can work. But when we put together instruments, financial instruments, that become so complicated that we can't understand them, and the institutions are making money on the transactions, and the faster they move these transactions, the more money they will make, then they lose sight of what exactly the institution is there to do. And they start to think, we're here to manage risk, when really they've lost sight of what their central purpose, I think, really is.
Sure.
They did not manage risk in this instance here.
In fact, they managed their own risk.
No. They managed risk. They did not manage risk in this instance. They took risk with the people's money, with the government's money, with our future's money. And they said at the end, they said, well, we are broke. We are bankrupt. We cannot do anything. We need you to help us.
Yes.
You know, let me say something about what we saw in the film here.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of these people who I own some property.
Mm-hmm.
The value of the property, I bought it in 2000 for $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
I needed cash. I was in very bad need for cash. I went to one of the luckiest bankers, I think, is GMAC, when they loaned me the money because I'm still paying the payment.
Right.
I needed $1 million. On the $250,000 property in Washington, D.C., they loaned me $1 million.
Wow.
$1 million.
Right.
Dollars on $250,000. When the guy came to look at
and
the
you're
property,
you're an economist, and you took the money.
I'm telling you. I said
right.
We. When I said we, I didn't say they.
Right,
the people.
Right.
No,
it
we.
Was a
all
deal.
Of us.
Right. It was a deal.
I needed the money, but still, I had the resources to pay it back.
Sure.
I am able to pay it back. That's why I'm saying GMAC is very lucky. But how many Muhammad Oasis who could not afford to pay back the loan, and they went for that $1 million, and to hell with it. Now everybody is in the same boat,
right.
And they are laughing all the way to the bank and to the farm and to the boat and to the airplane they bought and all these excesses that we have in the society.
What effect are we seeing on this of this in Europe? How badly has Europe been hit? I know in the film he makes a real point of saying that, you know, America was the sort of central point, and almost Europe got a little blindsided as well by the whole thing. I mean, to the point where they didn't find out to the day that Lehman was going bankrupt that it was even going bankrupt, things along that nature. And I think some of the American regulators didn't even know the rules in Britain, for instance. So how bad is it now in Europe and in other places in the world?
Well, I mean, Europe is certainly greatly affected. And, you know, the banking system in Iceland is an example, in mm-hmm. Ireland now and in Greece. They're suffering from some of the problems associated with the financial meltdown. And I think, you know, we look at, you know, his description in the film about bundling sort of risky assets together. And one of our problems is really the creativity and the sort of statistical analysis we can do. And there is a credible story for why we can bundle these together and make them of lower risk. And when you sell that and say, oh, well, you know, we've actually figured something out. And we've
right.
taken a lot of brain power and we put it into this. And now this really is safer. You know, you can convince an awful lot of people that, hey, this is a safe investment and this is going to last for me and it's going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you build up this story that, you know, the financial system is really much more sound than anyone really realizes. And this mm-hmm. is where I think, you know, the problem is the complexity. No one quite understood that complexity. Each instrument by itself made some sense.
Yes.
But when you bundle them all together and then try to understand how it interacts with each other, no
it's
one, I think, was able
That's
to do that.
Point.
That's exactly like cooking a bad meal,
mm-hmm.
and then you recook it and you add stuff to it. And this is exactly what they did. They recooked their books in order to make them smell better, look better, and sell them. And
right.
on the European
That's
issue,
yeah.
on the European issue, there is one municipality in Norway that lost all of their money with Lehman Brothers, I think.
Yes.
I mean, they went broke.
Yeah.
Because there was, and the mayor said, when they asked him, he said, I'll never trust an American with a suit an Itai anymore in my life. I'm going to keep my money here. And on the rest of the European countries, they call them the pigs. Portugal, Ireland, Greece, Spain, they call them the pigs.
Yes.
Because it is worse than a pig pen now, their situation and their economic situation. And we're going to have to wake up one day. We have to handle the whole situation all together. We cannot, America cannot and will never be able to survive on its own by solving its own problems.
Yes.
Because we are connected. We have, it is a global situation now. We are all connected with one umbilical cord, which is the open market economy. The Chinese are connected to us.
Yes.
We are connected to the Europeans. We are connected to the Middle Easterners. We are also connected to Africa. And we cannot let anybody fail. If one of us in this world community fails, then all of us are a failure. And even if America succeeded now in turning the economy, what are we producing to ship to the world in order to exchange our
Mohammed, let me just say this. You know, Asia was able to sort of avoid some of these problems because they've been very well regulated over the years. So that was one of the issues. But before we go on, I do want to go to one last piece of tape here where, you know, it goes back to the issue you mentioned earlier regarding the idea that Wall Street and the government are so sort of intertwined here and some possible fixes to our problems. So let's go to another piece of tape and take a look at this.
When the financial crisis struck just before the 2008 election, Barack Obama pointed to Wall Street greed and regulatory failures as examples of the need for change in America.
A lack of oversight in Washington and on Wall Street is exactly what got us into this mess.
After taking office, Obama spoke of the need to reform the financial industry.
We want a systemic risk regulator, increased capital requirements. We need a consumer financial protection agency that we need to change Wall Street's culture.
But in its first year, the Obama administration did not enact a single major financial reform.
Addressing Obama and, quote, regulatory reform, my response, if it was one word, would be, ha. There's very little reform.
How come?
It's a Wall Street government.
Yeah, and clearly, gentlemen, what he means by that is if I go down the list here of all the people that Obama appointed, into positions that were not only folks who were involved in the earlier stages in the Clinton administration and Reagan administration and sort of setting these wheels in motion, but then the newer folks who were involved in Goldman Sachs, et cetera, et cetera. It really does begin to look like Wall Street has basically taken up shop in Washington, D.C.
Well, and that's part of the problem with trying to push forward the idea of regulation. When they say we need to regulate more, well, that's fine, but it's too broad of a term. And we get into this debate, should we have regulation or should we have deregulation? Deregulation has been proved to be bad. We need to re-regulate now. We need to do more. But it's not as simple as just regulate or deregulate. We need a certain rules of the road that everyone needs to abide by. And it is true, though, that those rules of the road are influenced and affected by the players in the game. Mm-hmm. And so when we sit down and say, well, let's implement new regulations, and we had a financial reform bill that finally came through this year, mm-hmm. but it didn't include a lot of the changes that many people pointed to and said were necessary. There was no reform of Fannie and Freddie.
Let me give Mohammed one last chance because we're running out of time.
Yes, but the Republican Party, are they going to allow him to do anything? Absolutely not. And you ain't seen nothing yet until they take over the House. And I want to see what's going to happen to the American economy. Mm-hmm. They want to stop spending. They want to turn back the health reform act and all these things. They want to pressure the poor more, and then they are going to stop the tax breaks for the poor.
Yes.
And then what are they going to do for America and for the future of the world? I think they are going to destroy it.
Great question. And Craig Ferguson has been very, very he's been derisive. He's been talking very badly about the Obama administration and not doing more to save us from this situation that continues to get worse and worse and worse. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It was a great discussion. I wish we had more time because there's a bunch of things I wanted to get to. But again, I truly appreciate you coming here, Steve and Mohammed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank you as well for joining us. We appreciate you being here again. If there's anything you would like to say, if there's questions or anything of that nature or any movies that you would like us to review here on this show, please send in your recommendations to cinepolitics@presstv.com and let us know. I'd love to hear from you. What you have to say about this crisis or any other topics that we discuss here on CinePolitics. Once again, I'm Michael Ayala. Thank you very much for joining us from here in Washington, D.C.